Hey everyone, welcome back to Sort of Sophisticated, the podcast where we mix pop culture, history, and probably just enough sarcasm to make you look brilliant at brunch on Sunday. I'm Pete.
And I'm Amanda. And today we're diving into a topic that feels like it should be a movie, except it probably already is like 1,000 times.
I'm excited. What? Movies?
You should be, because it's probably something you're going to love.
I know.
I already know what it is,
and I love it.
We're talking about D-Day, people.
D-Day.
The day the free world basically risked everything on a coin toss on the beaches of Normandy. Because June 6th is right around the corner, and we're celebrating 81 years since it all went down.
Which is totally crazy when you think about it.
Why is it crazy?
I mean, here we are today, like 80 years later. And now if you go to like any of those beaches, like Utah or Omaha or Juneau or whatever, I mean, like, I know they're historical sites and everything, but did you know you could also just like sunbathe?
What are you talking about?
You can tan.
Yeah, sure.
You could just chill on a beach like it's Newport or Huntington or anything. Uh-huh. Like, that's just bonkers to me.
Why is that bonkers?
Because all these people were killed there. Like, it's hallowed ground.
Not on Newport or Huntington beaches.
No, you could do it on Normandy Beach. That's what I'm telling you.
Oh.
You can go to those beaches, and while they're still like historical places to visit, if we went and visited France right now, went there, my daughter would be like, Dad, UV's 11. Like, I'm just going to chill and like sit on this beach while you go look at the historical sites. Seriously?
Huh.
Like, I would think they'd be like off limits completely and totally. No, that's what I mean. It is nuts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, your brain's in a very weird place, but what's new?
We've gone over this like a thousand times.
Okay.
Can we
word
do
word of the day?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I had one, but I just changed it.
Oh, no.
Is that okay?
Okay.
Because my daughter hit me up last night with it, and I think it's excellent. Lurkable.
Lurkable?
Lurkable.
Like you're lurking in the dark?
Like you're lurking on
like
your friends?
Like you're cute enough to someone to lurk on you? What?
So, you know, like you hold your phone up and like you come up behind someone and check what they're watching on their phone or looking at.
So you're being nosy.
You're being nosy.
Why don't we just call it being nosy?
No. She said her boyfriend was lurking on her phone. And I'm like, what do you mean lurking? And she goes, well, in his defense, I mean, I had my phone. My phone was lurkable. And I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, well, I was holding it in a position that was lurkable. I'm like, wait a second. Like, so somehow it's okay then? And she's like, well, yeah, kind of, because I left it lurkable. So I don't even know if it's a real word, but we're going to try to use lurkable, which basically means nosy.
All right.
That's what we're going for.
Me and Gen Alpha, man, we just...
We're gonna do this.
Okay, Pete.
What?
How are we going to be more lurkable?
More lurkable?
With
we can't be more.
Curious.
Look at the way we're sitting. We can't be more lurkable. I physically cannot see your computer.
Okay, fine.
What?
How is this topic actually going to make us more cultured and curious, Pete?
Do we really have to do this? For this episode, how is it going to make...
I mean, like, I know you think it's obvious, but...
It is very obvious. Do you know how many soldiers lost their lives?
Fair, but there may be people who don't actually know, so stop being so judgy, please.
This one's hard for me.
Maybe we can talk about why learning about D-Day.
Because a lot of people died, and it matters because they did it for our freedom. And it forces us to zoom out and remember what real courage and real sacrifice really means. Okay?
Okay.
This whole like day and age of me and my stuff and entitlement and all that stuff.
But see, people don't, like, it's not a holiday, so people don't get it off. So people don't care.
And I don't want to be nice right now. I just want to say that learning about D-Day reminds us it's not about us as an individual. It is more about us as a people. And when brought together under massively intense circumstances, what we're willing to do to make this world a better place.
So collective we.
Okay.
And
always.
Are we done being invective?
Yeah. Oh my God. You can't go back to an old word. Okay.
But it works so well here.
Okay,
and
whatever.
I learned something new.
Fine.
Okay, fine. You're very passionate about this.
I am.
So
no. This is how this whole episode is going to go.
Okay,
I am on the soapbox
it's
the
fine.
Entire
Then why don't
40
you
minutes,
set the
baby.
Stage?
All right. I'm setting it.
Like a real quick recap.
Quick recap and then we'll go deep.
D-Day.
Okay. Got it. Okay. So June 6, 1944, Normandy, France. Operation Overlord. That's what we called it, people. The Allies. Do I have to explain what the Allies are?
You might.
Fine. Okay. The Allies. You're right. I got to be nicer. The United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, and a few free French and Polish forces basically launched the largest seaborne invasion in human history up until that point ever, period, mic drop. 156,000 troops supported by 5,000 warships and 11,000 aircraft.
That's a lot.
Crossed the English Channel to save all of Western Europe by breaking into Nazi-occupied France and to start pushing Hitler's forces back into Germany. That is the short version.
I mean, it's insane if you think about it.
It is. I'm not even including paratroopers. Over 25,000 of them dropped behind enemy lines around midnight, 6 hours before the beach landings
insane.
Even started. Right. Job was simple. Cause chaos, take bridges, blow up roads, confuse Germans, whatever it took to get shit going and put Germany back on their heels.
Did it actually work?
Mostly. Oh, yeah, mostly okay. At work. A lot of them landed in like the wrong spots. Some drowned in flooded fields.
It is crazy to me that like paratroopers were like a thing back then.
Totally were. No. Yeah, it was messy, but it worked. Hmm. They managed to disrupt the German army just enough to help everybody on the beach the next morning. Yes.
So that by itself is insane. I mean, how basically the U.S. and England coordinated more than 180,000 troops without cell phone, like the technology, like it's nuts. I can't even wrap my brain around it.
No Google Calendar, nothing. Maps, a bunch of walkie-talkies with a bunch of radio static. Red Dog Wonder, Red Dog Squadron, right? Like bubblegum, duct tape, like this. No.
But this, like, who is the commander of all this?
This is batshit. Thank you very much. My man. My man. Right? Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Oh, did not realize Big he was Ike. Your man.
I like Ike. What? Our future president. Eisenhower. Huh. Well, now our long dead president, yes. But you get the idea. Back then, he was our future president. Okay, fun fact. It was supposed to happen on June 5th, 1944, but they had to delay it one day because of, quote unquote, inclement weather.
Would be a good reason to delay.
No. Imagine the stress they're under for 24 hours. I mean, okay, so here's the deal. You're trying to save
Waiting
Europe.
For it to pass.
Right. Everybody's ready to go. All of a sudden, rain delay people, and they like have to roll tarp over the infield. That's bullshit. If I was a soldier, I would shit my pants waiting for those 24. What were they thinking for 24 hours? Like, what was going on in their brain? I can't wait for an Amazon package to come in 24 hours. And these people are literally like, we're going. We're not going. We're waiting 24 hours to go, like, kill or be killed. Like, that was what was in their brain for 24 hours. Amanda, dude, serious shit.
So sad.
Yeah. So think about it, though. If conditions hadn't improved in that one day, thank God they did, they were planning on moving the whole invasion out 2 more weeks, which when you think about it is nuts, because it could have changed the entire outcome of the war. Like, Germany could have got more prepared. Like, more shit could have leaked out. The tides could have been different, and like, boats would have landed different. Like, it was a big, big deal. Like, there was so much effing planning that went into this for it to work perfectly. It's like climbing Mount Everest. Like, have you ever read about climbing Mount Everest, like, ever? Or like, seen on TV? You get that window of weather, and you have to like go.
Yeah.
Because you don't know if the weather's going to hold. Same exact situation. And you like pray to God it holds or you die. Same. It's crazy. Yes.
Well, and since it was such a massive coordinated effort, was it all the beaches or was it specific beaches? Because I mean, there was a ton of soldiers and then it was all at the same time. So how did they like time all of them landing?
Oh, yeah. No. A lot of beaches. 5 beaches.
Right. But how did they time?
Yeah. No, because they were amazing. Because Eisenhower was a badass mofo. Yes. No, totally. Okay. Like, 5 beaches, Utah, Omaha, Gold, Juneau, and Sword. And each beach was assigned to a country. So the Americans, like the ones we know about because we took American history, of course, got Utah and Omaha. The British mostly had Gold and Sword, and the Canadians took Juneau. And each one sort of had their differences, like terrain, tides, and even the amount of German defenses that were in each area. So they all had some pretty different outcomes.
I mean, I think we need to go beach by beach just to learn a little bit more.
I love
specifically.
It. I love it.
Give me the details. Let's start with Utah.
Okay, wait. I want to give some initial strategy first. Like what the whole bigger
big
plan was. Yes, okay. And then we'll go beach by beach. Is that fair?
But I mean, wasn't it just like to beat the Germans?
Yes, no, I know. But I mean, like, I want to make it sound sophisticated.
Well, okay, or how about just sorta?
Whatever. Okay.
Cliff note version.
Can I quote?
Sure.
Okay, that's why it's going to be sophisticated. The overall Allied strategy on D-Day was to secure 5 beachheads, along a 50-mile stretch of Normandy coast, using a coordinated amphibious assault backed by airborne landings behind enemy lines. The goal was to overwhelm German defenses, establish a foothold in France, and then rapidly push inland to link the beaches together, cut off German reinforcements, and eventually advance towards major targets like Caen and Paris. Each beach had assigned objectives and forces that were to work in tandem to break through Hitler's Atlantic Wall and create a unified front that would drive Nazis back across Western Europe.
I mean, that's very sophisticated.
Yes, it was very sophisticated. But I think you needed to know, like, sort of what the plan was. That was the plan.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, fine.
But did it work? Maybe I need to rephrase that. I mean, of course it worked. We won.
Duh.
But did it go as planned?
Okay, that's actually a very good question. Like, all well thought out plans, Amanda. Absolutely not. Wasn't quite a shit show.
Then what went wrong?
But it got the job done. And that's all that mattered. By the end of the day, more than 156,000 troops had made it ashore. And within just a few weeks, they linked the beachheads together and they started the slow march inland. And within 2 months, Paris was liberated. And by the next year, Germany surrendered. So while it didn't go off without a hitch, you could say D-Day strategy worked and was basically the reason we won the war.
I mean, thank God, because people were way more ballsy back then and definitely more courageous than I think you or I are.
Whoa, speak for yourself.
No, you know we would both play dead.
I would trudge my ass to war. What are you talking about? You're a meanie.
No, I think we would just... Bleh.
Oh, my God.
We'd possum it.
Oh, my God. Did you just say we'd play possum? I hate you. Okay. Yep. Yeah, these soldiers and captains, and like, they were just amazing. Like, we literally owe our lives to them. 81 years ago, nobody thinks about it. I mean, I don't want to say nobody thinks about it. I think younger generations don't think about it as much. I think it's totally incumbent upon us to sort of keep that story going, right? Each subsequent generation has to teach the next generation. Totally important.
Then why don't we have like a D-Day Memorial Day? Because I know we have Memorial Day or Veterans Day.
We do have a D-Day. We don't have a day off. So I want to be careful with that. If you ask someone who was part of the war or a family who was affected, you're effing right. They're celebrating and memorializing and remembering D-Day on June 6th. Okay. It's a big deal. And
but don't we, as a culture, use Memorial Day for like all...
Yes,
memorials, because not just D-Day?
Yes, because we just don't want to have every, like, we'd have to do one for the Vietnam War, we'd have to do one for the Korean War, we'd have to do one for World War One. We'd have to do one for World War II. I mean, how far back do you go?
So
that's why we created more of it. But my point is those affected, they're sitting around solemnly on D-Day. Let's cut the crap. Okay. They are, yeah.
Okay, so just to clarify, Memorial Day is the day that we remember the people who have fallen, and Veterans Day is the day that we celebrate veterans, people who have served or are serving, correct?
Yes, and well, technically yes, but living or dead for veterans. If you've died, you get both days.
Oh,
you really do.
Oh, okay.
Right?
I don't think I remember that.
Yeah, if you haven't died, you get Veterans Day. If you've died, you get both.
Oh, okay.
And technically, there's something called POW MIA Recognition Day.
I mean, I've seen the flags for that.
Yes, and that's for anybody who went missing and never was found. And in this case, we're going to talk a little bit about those people too. So like.
Everybody, but it falls on a certain date, right?
Everybody is covered. The third Friday in September every year. Yes, it does. National POW MIA Recognition Day.
I mean, it's such a sad thing.
It is very sad.
People who just go missing.
Yes, there were a lot of people that went missing in World War II. There were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Should we go back to the beaches of Utah?
Yes. Back to the beaches. Okay. Utah's a good one to start with, actually. Because Utah went surprisingly well.
Oh.
And we want to start on a high note.
Okay.
Right?
Here we go.
So first off, you know the actual beach wasn't named Utah, I hope, right? Right. That would be dumb. Why would they have a beach named Utah in France? That was just a code name that the American forces gave. So we're going to be...
Makes more sense.
We're going to be a little cultured here. And we should know the actual names of the beaches or French towns if there
are.
So we'll go through those. So Utah's real name was a Madeline Beach. And it was located near the town of Saint-Marie-du-Mont in Normandy, France.
Okay.
It's part of what is known as the Cotentin Peninsula. And it sits on the westernmost edge of the D-Day landing zone. So, on the morning of the invasion, the troops actually landed a little bit off target, almost a mile south of where they were supposed to, by accident. But that actually worked in their favor, because there was less German forces there.
Hmm.
Well, that and the 82nd and 101st Airborne had already landed behind German lines earlier that night and helped clear out some of the shit that we were talking about earlier. So, like, we were ready to go. Yeah? So, all told, like, not a lot of troops died there. Out of 23,000 troops that landed, only 197 people died.
Wow.
And 60 went missing. And
I mean...
So, I know I really shouldn't say the word only, because, like, if anybody died, that's, like, a big deal. But I want to make sure people know that's a low amount of people that
probably
died.
Probably less than they projected would. Which goes back to how courageous these people were.
Yes.
Like, knowing... The percentage of people that probably wouldn't make it was higher than 1%.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah.
Fun fact, you know who led that mission?
Your man?
No, not my man. Oh. No. He was in England. No, but good guess. Brigadier General Theodore Roosevelt Jr.
Huh.
Yes, the President Teddy Roosevelt's son.
Oh,
jumping in a battle. Like a total badass, right?
I mean, like, just think of them generationally, how much they did for America and the world.
They
were crazy.
Awesome. Let's go, Roosevelt.
Okay, so then who led Omaha Beach?
Omaha Beach.
Because I think that's the one that all the movies are after, right?
Tom Hanks did. Yes.
No, he didn't.
He didn't? I swear he did.
I knew he was there, but...
Saving Private Ryan?
No,
okay, whatever.
In real life, IRL.
Okay, I don't know. I'm not that sophisticated. Sorry, you're going to have to look that one up.
Okay, okay.
But Omaha Beach, total different story. Like, see it in all the movies. That one was a nightmare. Like, nightmare. Do me a favor. Put your hand up in front of you so you can see your palm, please. Thank you very much. I want to help people imagine the geography for a second. So your thumb, as you're looking at your left... Put up your left hand. Your thumb is Utah, okay? That was the farthest west landing point. We just talked about that one. Then your next one is Omaha. That's your index finger. That's the one we're going to talk about now. And then you got gold, which is your middle finger. And then Juno, ring finger. And then sword, pinky, in that order. Make sense? Like, so you know how
that
we're...
That was the shoreline.
Yes, literally, that's how we're tracking. Okay, you with me? So index finger, Omaha. So it didn't really have a French name for its beaches. So it was just near the towns of Colaville-sur-Mar. Don't kill me. I don't know. I'm not French. And Saint-Laurent-sur-Mar. So if like they called the beaches anything, it would have been just like Colville Beach or like Saint Laurent Beach, right? That's all. Nothing too sophisticated, just little towns there. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And those beaches had like massive landscape shit that made things sketchy. That was the one with the really, really steep cliffs you see in the movies and all the German hidden bunkers that you couldn't, like, it was crazy, right? Germans held the high ground for sure. It was really sad. And the Germans were like totally prepared for this one. They blasted the whole first wave with insane machine gun fire. Like, some of the boats couldn't even land because of sandbars and, like, other problems. So some soldiers had to just wade right out into the gunfire, or they just ended up drowning right there. Like, it was brutal. Like, sad, sad.
That's insane.
Yes. 2,000 of our troops died right there in the first few minutes.
That's terrible.
Just on that one stretch of beach.
How did they even, like, overcome that?
No, it's insane. That's my point. Like, it's Saving Private Ryan. That opening scene that they did in Saving Private Ryan, like, I think everybody that should be required.
Well, you can add that in our to-do at the end of the episode.
Oh, my God. Fine. It's probably in there somewhere. Like, that, it was so bad, right? So, you got to remember, some of these guys, Amanda, they were teenagers. Like, barely in their, like, 18, 19, some of them barely in their 20s. So sad. So, out of 34,000 troops that landed or tried to land, 2,000 were killed and another 1,000 went missing, presumed drowned, and, like, a gazillion others were wounded. This was by far the toughest and bloodiest beachhead to secure. Also, it was defended by the most experienced German troops, the 352nd Infantry Division. Total badasses. It was really the only beach where, like, honestly, the actual success of the entire invasion was in serious jeopardy for a few hours. But then we won, and we saved Private Ryan, and it was the best thing ever. So.
Is Saving Private Ryan a true story?
No. Well.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Well,
I was like, oh,
sort
no.
of. Yeah.
Wait, sort of?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Okay, well, it was one of those that was like based on true events, but like not a true story by itself. So,
oh, okay.
So it was actually based, I think it was on the, I'd have to look it up, the Nyland brothers. I don't want to say this wrong. I think it might be, you might want to look it up. So Saving Private Ryan is about four brothers, three of which died. And then, of course, Tom Hanks goes to go find Matt Damon and sort of save Private Ryan. That's the whole point of the story. Yeah, so I think there were like four Nyland brothers. And yes, I don't know, some died. I don't know, one went missing. I don't know the whole story. But there's something there where they like had to go find the last brother, but they didn't do it the same way as Omaha Beach.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Because it's all about the sole survivor policy that the U.S. War Department had.
Yes.
Back then.
Yes, 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 yes.
It was aimed to prevent families from losing all of their sons.
Bingo. Yeah. So like it didn't all happen in Omaha, I don't think. I don't even know who was looking for him. I don't know any of the real story behind it, which I probably shouldn't get
sophisticated. Only two of them were killed in action during Normandy.
Uh-huh.
And then one of them went missing in action and was later captured as a prisoner of war in Burma.
Yeah.
And then,
okay, see, so yeah, all that's totally different. Then the movie is just all about literally storming Omaha and finding the one brother. So I get it. It's based on parts of the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense. Okay.
All right. Sorry. We took a little detour there. So let's get us back on track.
Okay. Back on track.
Sorry.
Where
about
we at?
That. I'm on, I think, my middle finger. Gold
Beautiful.
Beach.
Speaking of middle fingers. Hey, Amanda. How are you doing today? Okay.
You can stop flipping me off.
Wow.
Now.
Okay.
You're such a child.
Were you just lurkable? Were you lurking?
What? No.
I don't think that works.
No,
you were staring,
so.
Which is
don't
different
so.
Than lurking. Okay. Yeah. That didn't work. I don't think we're going to use lurkable. I think it's going to be too hard.
I think it's a dumb word.
But so do I, but we're doing it. Okay. Mm. All right. Here we go. Gold Beach. This one was the British. Okay. So the beach's names were Asnel's Beach. Oh, God. I feel so embarrassed. I don't know how to say this. And Versumar Beach, named after the local towns right there in the area as well. And this one wasn't like super easy or anything because the Germans were ready here too. They were prepared. But the British, Amanda, had a secret weapon, some weird looking tanks nicknamed Hobart's Funnies. I had to look these up. Can you do me a favor while I'm talking? Like, can you literally Google these?
Okay.
Look, ChatGPT Hobart's Funnies. They had special equipment that could roll over mines, cross obstacles, lay down road, go through sand. Like, this stuff was amazing. Check this out. They had like a dozen different types of tanks depending on what they were trying to do.
Huh.
It's like what problem they were trying to solve. So they could clear away debris or obstacles. Other ones literally swam ashore, totally helped them like not get blasted to death like what happened at Omaha. Some blew up mines by like pulsating the ground, like so the mines would blow up like without anybody around. Other ones laid roadways or bridges. Bridges. They made bridges. Like literally that's what the
Pretty
tank
genius.
Did. Yes.
Pretty
they were
genius.
Insane. They were all thanks to the military genius of some guy named British Major General Percy Hobart, who, mind you, came out of retirement to help build all this shit.
Is that where all of our Hobart mixers come from?
I have no idea what a Hobart mixer is.
I'm going to look that up.
Okay, look that
up.
But
also, why didn't we just all use these then?
Right? No. So I started looking this up. I'm like, wait, why weren't the Americans using these? So two reasons, which actually makes sense because I was pissed at first. So first of all, Americans didn't know how to use the tanks. like without the British guidance. And we didn't have enough time to learn, right? Remember, we're all coming together. We're trying to figure this out. June 6th, D-Day. Like, we would have needed months of training the American soldiers on how to use the British military equipment. So that was, first of all, logistically complicated. And then, like, just getting them from England across the English Channel on boats was, like, super hard. Because remember, they're trying to bring 180,000 people across, right? British soldiers, Canadian soldiers, American soldiers, everybody's coming across. So they only had room for as many as they had room for. Like, they had to limit what they could do. So, like, hindsight, of course, 2020, right? Totally could have used more in Omaha, probably bring less people and bring more tanks. Probably would have done better. But, like, there's a real reason why people didn't just, like, throw the Hobart funnies on all the ships. Does that make sense?
It does. Okay. And also just
what?
So we clarify my ignorance.
Yes.
Hobart mixers are not by the same Hobart.
Okay.
Yeah.
Different Hobart.
Different Hobart.
Good to know.
Yeah, you created the Hobart manufacturing in 1897. Created.
Okay, but still some old crap.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah,
all right.
For a while.
Well, that goes back. That goes back even further. All right. So Gold Beach, all told, 25,000 British soldiers landed, 400 killed, and another 1,000 went missing. And when I say missing in all these cases, they don't find them, right? They never found their bodies. So like they suspect they drowned or were taken prisoners of war and then killed. Like, so that's why America has that day of recognition. Yeah, yeah. So better than Omaha, but worse than Utah. And fun fact, this is where they built the artificial harbor the Allies used for the entire rest of the war. It's called Mulberry Bay, to bring supplies and ammunition to and from England. Go online. Like, Amanda.
Huh.
Like, they literally built slash dragged this thing across the English Channel. Get this. It handled over 2.5 million men, 500,000 vehicles, and 4 million tons of supplies during that one-year campaign when they were able to finally, like, make Germany surrender. If you go visit Normandy today, it's now a historical site, and you could totally go see it. So, like, I would go visit, like, Mulberry Bay, and my daughter would be on the beach, like, with her UV-11, right?
Living different lives.
Right.
But we gotta go one day. It's awesome.
Oh, we have to go. Okay. Next one up, ring finger, Juno. So the Canadians handled Juno. The Canadians, eh? Can I say that? Or is that culturally inappropriate? Can I not do that? Sorry, Canadians. No real beach names here that I could find. Oh my God. The towns were Courseulles-sur-Mer, Bernier-sur-Mer, and Saint-Aubin-sur-Mer. Very hard to say. Those are the three sort of beach towns. 21,400 Canadian soldiers, led by the 3rd Canadian Infantry Division and the 2nd Canadian Armored Brigade, supported by British Royal Navy and Royal Air Force. 340 soldiers died and 47 went missing. This one was pretty tough. The second toughest behind Omaha, I mean, as far as I know. Pretty well fortified by the Germans with bunkers and anti-tank walls and mines and like everything. They had to land at high tide, which kind of sucked, because on the one hand, they were close to shore, but on the other hand, closer to machine gun fire. A lot of the boats were destroyed before the troops could even get on the beach. And the towns were Courseulles-sur-Mer and Bernier-sur-Mer and Saint-Aubin-sur-Mer. And at Bernier-sur-Mer in particular, first wave casualties were almost as severe as Omaha. But the Canadians were like total badasses, Amanda, and basically fought house to house, clearing the coastal towns. And by the end of the day, they had pushed further inland than any of the other Allied forces. So all in all, despite like the brutal first wave, Juno was an absolute success. And the Canadians still see this today as one of the biggest moments of national pride in their military history.
Wow. Go Canada. Yeah. All right. Well, why don't you give me the little pinky finger then? Tell me all about Sword.
Let's go Sword. Okay. So that one was on the easternmost edge of the landing zone, the last beach. And this one was handled by the British. Sword had no real beach names either, kind of like Juno. But we're closest to the towns Ouistreham and Hermanville-sur-Mer. Okay, remember at the beginning, I said the whole point of the attack was to secure the beachheads and then connect with each other and then start marching towards Paris. Yeah, okay, I got it, yeah. Okay, so this beach was the closest to Caen, if you remember.
Okay.
Like less than 10 miles away, like that big town that they were after. So of course it was like super heavily fortified, particularly around the town of Ouistreham.
So did they just draw the short straw? And
yeah,
they got
basically.
That one?
Yes, basically. Oh. Yeah, man. I mean, they were ready. Like anti-tank ditches, machine gun nests, mines, even wooden stakes. Wooden stakes. Dude, what were they trying to do? Kill vampires? Right.
That's crazy.
29,000 British soldiers led by the 3rd Infantry Division. 630 troops were killed. 1,500 went wounded or missing.
Wow.
Big numbers.
Yeah.
This was the only beach that the Allies made contact with German armored forces. And the counterattack by the Germans was really, really strong. Ultimately, the infantry was able to link up with the 6th Airborne Troop, who had parachuted in earlier, the paratroopers, right? Surprise attack at a place called Pegasus Bridge, which was a super important move that basically secured the entire eastern flank. So overall, Sword was considered a success, even though they didn't like achieve their goal of taking the town of Khan. It was really only delayed a few weeks after they got organized. So successful.
So I mean, like, after all was said and done, by the end of June 6th, what did it all look like? Because it sounds like generally everything was successful, but like, did Roosevelt and Churchill feel the same way?
Oh, totally. Amanda, it looked like an absolute frigging miracle. A miracle, yes. We totally had a foothold in France. Over 150,000 troops were ashore. And even though we suffered thousands of casualties, we basically just pulled off the impossible. I mean, we had finally cracked Hitler's Atlantic Wall.
I mean, I'm assuming that's why people have always said, like, a quote unquote, beginning of the end.
Exactly. I mean, after D-Day, like, it wasn't a slam dunk or anything, but we basically began the slow and steady march to Paris, then to Berlin. And within a year, like I said earlier, the Nazis surrendered. So to be clear, D-Day didn't like end the war or anything, but it was the absolute turning point of the war. First big roll of the ball uphill, huge, built momentum.
It's amazing. Like, if you think about it for a minute, so much had to go right or just not go completely wrong for it all to work and kind of fall into place. Like, there is no wonder why they call it a miracle.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, it was a totally massive, chaotic, bloody, gut-wrenching day that literally changed the world, like changed the course of human history.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes. And people like don't even like, they just don't think about it the same way. I don't know. It's why it's important to teach younger generations.
Absolutely.
That's it. Seriously.
Well, history lesson appreciated. Thank you. I mean, it was amazing to learn all of that. Not amazing what actually happened, you know, to all the people that lost their lives and sacrificed for us.
I know.
I do always like when we make it relevant to today, right? Like our history that we bring to today so that the way the next generation can learn how it still matters and what we can learn, even though it was like 81 years ago. So I think we should probably tie that into this episode.
I think that's an excellent idea. What do you got? Give me some give me some lessons learned.
So a few things that I actually researched and in no particular order. First, the idea of unity in chaos. Think about it. Multiple nations with different languages, right?
Well,
you had.
Yeah, well, you had the USA and England. They both spoke the same language.
Well, sure.
Let's cut the shit. Well,
sure.
Mostly.
But you had the Canadians who were probably speaking French, and then the Poles and the French refugees, and then even some defecting Germans, right? You had the Norwegians and the Dutch. There's a ton of different
good
cultures
point.
And languages. Yes. But somehow, when united under a common cause, they merged their ideas and came up with agreed strategies and found ways to work together. It's kind of wild, considering how hard it is to get like you and me to even agree on what wine we're going to drink when we go out to dinner.
Well, that's because you have a really weird taste of wine.
No, you just have a little pansy taste in wine. It's fine.
Wow.
It's fine.
You know what? I'm glad we weren't at D-Day together. It wouldn't have gone
we
well.
We wouldn't be drinking wine, fine.
Yeah. But we would be arguing and not coming up with the right strategy. No, you go there. No, you go there. Okay. I'm sorry. I know we're making light of it and everything, but like the bottom line is you're absolutely right. Some multiple numbers of nations come together and have to figure this out. That is unity. That is amazing. Yeah. I love it. I don't want to make light of it. Totally.
All right. So second.
Yes.
It is a constant reminder of the cost of freedom.
Amen.
Literally
to that.
Thousands of soldiers died in one afternoon, right?
Yes.
On all these different beaches. And so I think it should remind us that democracy, peace, and human rights do not come free. And that's not just World War II. Right. Like, unfortunately, we have stark reminders of that even today with all the wars and genocides that are going on all over the world.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
I hate that we talk for myself. Sometimes you feel immune to it because you just see it. You're bombarded with it.
And
it's terrible.
So
I don't want to feel that
far
way.
Far away.
I don't want to feel that way.
Right. Yeah. Like we here don't experience any of that. So it's hard for us to.
Yeah.
I don't want to say care.
Amen. And I hate that we're saying that. And I just want to be a better person. This is like cathartic for me. Because if I can talk about it, like on this podcast, in some small way, it makes me feel like I'm like respecting and honoring. Yes, totally. Fair.
All right. So third, courage isn't comfortable. Like these were young men.
Yeah.
Some of them, like you said, teenagers, and they're literally stepping straight into hell, into a war zone, into a place where they know that they possibly can die.
I can't, or very well may die.
I don't even get it.
Yes.
So I think it should make us think twice before we complain about like Wi-Fi or first world problem.
Or why I go click on Amazon and like why doesn't Prime Video work right now?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know. I'm a loser. Okay, fine.
All right. And I guess my last one would just be planning matters.
Planning matters?
It does.
Family matters. Planning matters.
Planning matters.
Give it to me.
Like fake missions and insane strategies that included over 30 different backup plans and contingencies were in place just for this one.
That's insane.
Coordinated attack, right?
30 backup plans?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
And I mean, when it's the difference between life and death, you can't leave anything to chance, right?
You cannot.
You know shit will go wrong, and so you have to plan for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, here's the thing, right? This is one man's view, dude. Back then, it was just better. I mean, today, everybody's about ego. Life is just way too easy for us. I'd argue D-Day is still relevant because the world still needs ordinary people willing to do extraordinary things. And that, Amanda, is what 156,000 Americans did and 180,000 Allied troops.
Absolutely.
Ordinary people willing to do extraordinary things.
Yeah. And we need to remember the cost of forgetting history, because when we stop honoring the sacrifices, we risk repeating the same mistakes. So really, just like, we got to cut the shit, right? We all need to learn about this stuff, and it makes us better humans, better dinner guests.
Better Trivial Pursuit players.
Fair. So in honor of being a better dinner guest.
What?
You want to give us some fun facts?
Oh my God. We're going to fun facts?
I mean, it's coming June 6th. Gotta be ready.
I have 1,000 fun facts. It was very hard for me to pare this down, but I did my work.
They're all not very tragic.
Are you ready?
Okay.
Ears open. Did you know the D in D-Day doesn't stand for anything special? The D literally just means day. So it means like day, right? It's military lingo. The day before is D minus one. The day after is D plus one in military terms. So D-Day just literally means the day of the operation. So it just means day. Yeah, genius, right? There you go. Okay. Number two, did you know that Eisenhower actually wrote and had a failure speech totally prepared and kept it in his pocket during the battle? He had a handwritten statement accepting full responsibility in case the invasion failed, buried in his uniform shirt pocket. It began, "If any blame or fault attaches to this attempt, it is mine alone."
Ugh.
Thank God he never had to read it. Holy shit. What a man. No wonder he was president of the United States. Okay, number three. I love this one. At Sword Beach, while under fire, mind you very much, a bagpiper named Bill Millen played battle cry songs while bullets were whizzing by his head.
That's insane.
Yeah. Okay. When asked why German snipers didn't shoot him, a captured German soldier later said, "We thought he was gone crazy."
I guess so. That's, we didn't, one way, shoot, right? Him. Just be nuts.
Holy shit. Yeah. They brought a bagpiper along to like rally the rhythm. Our rhythm episode. Music.
Yeah.
Music was rallying. That's insane. Okay. Number four. The code names of the beaches were almost accidentally leaked in a crossword puzzle, of all things.
Huh?
Yeah, check this. Weeks before the invasion, a British newspaper's crossword puzzle featured answers Omaha, Utah, and Overlord. MI5, the British version of like the CIA, right, investigated the author of the crossword puzzle thinking he was a spy, but it turned out to be pure coincidence.
No way.
Or so they say.
No way.
No. So as it turned out, I learned later, I did some subsequent reading. Yes, some of the soldiers were talking to their friends and started using the terms Utah and Omaha and so on and so forth. So without knowing what he was doing, this man subconsciously worked them into the crossword puzzle. Like there was nothing really going on. But my point was, it did start leaking. So remember all the way back to the beginning when I was saying, like, if they would have really postponed this 2 weeks.
It'd be bad.
Yeah. Oh, it could have been bad. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, number five. Oh, I love this one too. Oh my God, I love all of these. Okay. The Allies used inflatable tanks and fake radio chatter to fool the Nazis. As part of something called Operation Fortitude, the Allies created an entire fake army, complete with rubber tanks and wooden aircraft and actor soldiers, used to convince the Germans that the invasion would hit Pas-de-Calais, not Normandy. And it totally worked. In fact, I was doing all this like fact-checking online. Hitler held back part of his army, assuming another attack was imminent, even after the invasion of Normandy started, because he thought this other fake army was coming at Pas-de-Calais. Yeah. So he didn't even like put full force at it. That's how much planning went into this crap. Like, they built fake wooden airplanes. So like, because, you know, back then they just had air, like, they could just look and they were like, oh, there's airplanes there. They didn't know if they were wooden or metal or whatever. We even went so far as used like heat, like heat producing materials, and put them in the aircraft. So like they thought there was a pilot that was like going to take off. The shit we came up with was crazy back then. Of course, nowadays it doesn't work. You have to come up with new shit. But that was amazing. Okay. Number six, paratroopers used cricket clickers. You know, cricket clickers that sound like, to identify each other.
Oh,
totally cool. Yeah, yeah. The American 101st Airborne Troops were given little metal cricket clickers to use at night. You clicked once, it meant friend. You're questioning. If you click once, you're like, hey, are you a friend? And if you receive two clicks back, then it was, yes, I'm a friend, I'm here. If you receive no clicks back, not a friend, get ready, I better kill who's ever in front of me. Simple, super eerie, but totally saved lives. I love that one. And finally, pigeons. Pigeons, like homing pigeons. Yes, some Allied units brought carrier pigeons in case radio communications failed. One famous pigeon, Gustav. Gustav, the famous pigeon, flew 150 miles back to England with the first D-Day landing report. He was later awarded the Dickin Medal, the animal version of the Victoria Cross, for participating in the war efforts.
Huh.
That's all I got.
Wow.
Fun facts out.
I love them. They're pretty random, but so good.
They were awesome.
You're very good at facts.
I love D-Day. I love fun facts. I love learning about D-Day. I love talking about D-Day. I love fun facts. Let's go.
I know. That's why you're destined to be a history teacher.
It's the best.
But my brain now is full of so much new info.
You know what I need to
do? I didn't know.
Can I do something real quick? Okay. Do you mind if I come over to your side? I need to look over your shoulder. I have.
So you can lurk?
You need to make the computer lurkable for me.
Oh, okay? I see.
I think this was the first episode we failed our word of the day.
Maybe.
I think this was. All right, that's all right.
It's not a real word.
It's over. We're over. Guys, we didn't do it. It's we not, didn't work in
you know
workable.
What? I don't think we failed. I think
we failed.
I think Gen Alpha has failed us.
We failed. It's okay.
We can agree to disagree.
Okay, fine.
Okay, so my brain is so full with so much information, and I have a pit in my stomach from thinking about all those servicemen and women who fought so hard for their countries. But before we close this thing out, boil it down for us. Like, what are the only things that we need to remember to keep this sacred and look smart if possible?
Are you sure you're ready for this?
I don't know if I am, but yes.
Okay. Call to action, people. Heavy episode, right? So I think this deserves real work on our part. All right.
I mean, definitely some respect.
Yes. All right. So first off, at the very least, go online and find something called the National D-Day Memorial Necrology Project. Please, the National D-Day Memorial Necrology Project. It lists the names of the 4,427 service members to date that died on D-Day, 2,510 Americans,
wow,
and 1,917 of all other Allied forces. Please spend 5 minutes thinking of those who paid the ultimate sacrifice for freedom. Their names are there, the state they were born in, the date they were born, when they died. It's important. Then, if the episode moved you, let's go out and do something. Visit a D-Day museum, whether it's the National World War II Museum in New Orleans or one of your local veterans memorials. Walking through history makes things real. And if you have kids, please, please bring them with you. Keep sharing the info with younger generations. Like we said, it's super important. And then if you ever find yourself in France, make a detour to Normandy. Stand on the cliffs. Walk on the beach. It's not just a place. It's hallowed ground. A reminder that freedom in any language comes at a cost. And finally, remember these relevant details to seem, well, sort of sophisticated. Number one, D-Day wasn't the end of World War II. It was the beginning of the end of World War II. June 6, 1944 marked the start of the liberation of Western Europe, not the final blow to Nazi Germany. Number two, the invasion succeeded because of planning, guts, and deception. From Hobart's Funnies to Operation Fortitude, the Allies used brains and bravery to pull off the impossible. It was absolutely a miracle. Number three, five beaches, five different stories. Utah, Omaha, Gold, Juneau, and Sword.
Don't forget your hand.
You got it. All had unique challenges, some smoother, some near disasters, but all critical to the bigger mission of Operation Overlord. Number four, D-Day was just one piece of a global strategy. It wasn't a one-day event. It was a turning point in a much larger Allied plan to squeeze Germany from both the East and West while coordinating with Soviet advances. And finally, success wasn't guaranteed, and everyone knew it. Eisenhower had the failure speech in his pocket. The odds were terrifying, but the outcome would be world-changing, and it totally was.
All right, dear listeners, there you have it. The beaches, the bluffs, and the breathtaking scope of D-Day. Look, D-Day wasn't just about strategy or firepower. It was about coordination, courage, and commitment from literally hundreds of thousands of individuals, most of whom were terrified, exhausted, and unsure of what was coming next. It's a story of nations aligning, egos being set aside, and regular people stepping into extraordinary roles without glory or a guarantee of survival.
It's a real moment in history. One where ordinary people did impossible things together. They fought not just to win, but to liberate, to take back freedom, and remind the world that courage doesn't always look like confidence. Sometimes it looks like crawling through sand under fire with your buddy at your side.
And if we've done our job today, you're walking away sort of sophisticated. Maybe even with a historical nugget to casually drop the next time someone quotes Tom Hanks from Saving Private Ryan at your next barbecue.
And if you learned anything new today, please hit that subscribe button. Please, please, please. and share this episode with a friend who thinks Operation Overlord is the name of an 80s hair metal band.
That'd be a good name.
I know, it totally would. We're kind of getting tired of doing this for free people, okay?
Well, Peter is anyways.
Right.
So go ahead and leave us a review and tell us which fun fact blew your mind. The one about the fake army, the cricket clickers, or the bagpiper dodging bullets. And if you're feeling extra sophisticated, send this episode to that one friend who still thinks the D&D Day stands for Doom. Until next time, stay curious, stay bold, and remember, behind every victory, there's a story.